Genesis 16, or the story of the birth and conception of Ishmael, is born out of a very familiar concept to us in our world right now. Conflict. Tension. A conflict between Sarah and her slave Hagar, between Sarah, Abraham, and God, and conflict between Sarah and her very own empty womb. This passage has often been mischaracterized as a catfight between Sarah and Hagar, a battle of wills. But I think there might be a more nuanced reading of this text. Perhaps there is more at play here that we can think about today. So I invite you to use your imaginations with me today. So at the beginning of Genesis, we're thinking about the beginning of the big things, of the world, sunlight, rushing waters, the air we breathe and the grass that we walk on, and animals, the beginning of humankind and its relationship to the world, God, and sin. It's based on mythological characters and simple characters that beg us to see parts of ourselves in their stories. But when we get to Abraham, we must start to reframe our reading of the text. This is no longer about the big things or the generalities, such as the start of the world and creation, but specificity. We're talking about a specific family in a specific geographic and social location. Now we have multifaceted characters who have real problems, real hopes, and desires. We have characters who are seeking connection with God, even though they aren't completely sure yet what it means to be in relationship with God. And it's from this overarching story about Abraham that we get at least three major religions. The conflict in this story starts not with Sarah and Abraham's struggle with infertility, though that definitely would have been a problem for them. But actually, it starts in the gap between God's promise and the fulfillment of that promise. Because in God's covenant with Abraham, God promised he would have many descendants, so many, in fact, that he would not even be able to count them. The conflict starts because God has seemingly promised them the impossible. They are quite old already, and him and Sarah have been struggling with this for years. They believe God will be faithful to Abraham's covenant, but they just don't know what that will look like because of their lived experience with infertility. As much as there is a stigma on childlessness and infertility now, it was exponentially worse in their time. Sarah's worth as a person and a wife all hinged on her ability to bear children and to bring into the world a beautiful baby boy that would inherit everything they had and carry on their legacy, not to mention to carry on his back the covenant God had made with Abraham. But for one reason or another, Sarah had not been able to conceive. And with that reality came the stinging presence of shame. It was within that shame that Sarah likely started to doubt herself. After so many years without results and watching her body age past the threshold of worthiness in her culture, she probably started to think, perhaps God hasn't included me in this covenant with Abraham. After all, God made the promise to Abraham and it hasn't explicitly named me as mother to this child. And we could think of her famous next move as selfish or even impatient. But what I think is far more likely is after all that time, she decided that there must be something they were missing. Maybe God was requiring some creativity from them. In her search for a resolution, she decided to include her young female slave Hagar, whom they had acquired during their time in Egypt. Now, it wasn't unusual for oppressed people in their countries to leave with foreigners to have a chance at a better life, and it certainly wasn't unusual for female slaves to be given to their male masters to produce heirs in the case that the mistress of the household was not able to provide them. And in the case that this is required, Hagar's child would legally become her mistress's at their birth. So perhaps the strategy wasn't impatience or selfishness, but an act of desperation and self-sacrifice to be sure Abraham's covenant came to pass. It was an act of employing her own human agency to take part in God's purposes for them. Sarah believed God had chosen to render her barren, and so she probably believed it must be true that she should partake in a common cultural practice and give Hagar to Abraham to perform this duty. The young Hagar, on the other hand, did not have a choice in whether she would bear the son of Abraham, as she was a slave with no social standing and no rights. This covenant-bearing responsibility is given her without any permission. Abraham and Hagar conceived, and surely Sarah must have been burning with envy. Because of the social status and pride that came with having a child, it seems this might have gotten to Hagar's head a little bit. At least Sarah seemed to think so. Because just as she has been oppressed as a slave, she now looks upon Sarah with contempt. She is the bearer of Abraham's only heir, something Sarah herself couldn't do. So it felt to Sarah as if Hagar was rising up to replace her in the social order, making Sarah the possession with no rights. This infuriated Sarah so much that she blames Abraham as the patriarch of the household for Hagar's insolence. And while Abraham's voice has been solid and decisive in earlier texts, his response in verse 6 are the only words he speaks in the whole chapter, but they're the catalyst for what comes next. In appeasing Sarah and absolving himself of any responsibility as the cultural head of household, he says, "Your slave girl is in your power. Do to her as you please." And these words must have empowered Sarah as Abraham re-established her as his primary and authoritative wife, because she deals with Hagar so harshly and treats her so poorly that Hagar believes it better to escape into the wilderness and try to return home to Egypt than to continue living in their household. Hagar ran away. And when I say ran, I probably mean waddled. I think of this woman traveling through the wilderness, very pregnant, waddling with her hand on her back to support her enormous belly. I imagine she was probably sweating profusely, regardless of the temperature, and probably stopped frequently for bathroom breaks and to catch her breath. She came to a well on her path and took a break from the long journey. I imagine Hagar, as she sat at this well, questioned, why had she abandoned the relative security of Abraham's household? Why had she looked on Sarah with contempt in the first place? Why did she come to the wilderness to have her child? What was her plan? And it must have been at this crossroads of exhaustion and doubt that the Lord appeared before her. God knows Hagar, and God demonstrates this by calling her by name and being able to place her in her social location, a slave, Sarah's slave. God asks her where she has come from and where she is going, as though God has not already shown that God probably knows all of that. And in doing so, God positions God's self to listen to Hagar and allows her to talk about what she's going through. Surely, she lamented, this was never a part of God's covenant. Certainly, God hadn't planned for Sarah to treat her so poorly and for Hagar to run away and give birth in the wilderness, right? And God sees Hagar and looks on her with compassion. God sees the pain, the exhaustion, the struggle, and makes her the bearer of her own promise. And it's reminiscent of the promise made to Abraham. She is conceived and will bear a son, an heir, who has a relationship with the wilderness in which Hagar sits at this very moment. He will be a wild ass of a man, a free man, born of a slave mother. She will have many offspring because of Ishmael. And in the wilderness, at the well, she understands God has seen and acknowledged her afflictions. Unlike Sarah, God has dealt with her kindly, and she names God, something that no one else in the Old Testament does. She names God El Roy, or the God who sees. And the well at which she sat, she named the well of the living one who sees me. And by the time she returns home, Abraham must have understood the significance of her communion with God in the wilderness, because he names the child Ishmael, as Hagar was commanded. Now, at first, this story was likely told as an explanation for the origins of the Ishmaelite people and where a certain well got its name, but does it not hold truth all the same? Our God is a God who sees us, wants to hear our stories, and chooses to bring us into God's promises. But what does that look like? Hagar is not a part of the chosen people, but instead was actually property of the chosen people. But she realizes God has seen her, not only physically as she sat in the wilderness, but also emotionally. God acknowledges her pain, gives heed to her afflictions, and recognizes the social and cultural factors at play in her decisions to leave. And like I said earlier, the mainstream interpretation of this story has been that this was a catfight between two women, maybe because of arrogance or maybe because they didn't want to share their man. But I think a nuanced and careful reading of the text reveals the power structures at play in their household over against the cultural definers of femininity and worth. While the two women fought for one spot at the table in a world that struggled to see their value, God set up a whole new table full of empty chairs. And when they sat down, they realized God was inviting each of them to play a specific role in furthering God's purposes. Perhaps Sarah was onto something. Maybe, as created in God's image, instead of asking, when will God fulfill God's promises? We must ask ourselves, how, as a creative vessel filled with the gifts from the same God and as the hands and feet of Christ, how can I fulfill these promises in my community? God wants to bring us into God's promises, but I think we need to figure out where our chair is and sit down. Like Sarah, we can be mistaken about our role or lack of a role in the process, or like Hagar, we can be given a massive role that we never asked for and didn't want in the first place. And they were both bearers of a divine promise. But this story is part of the process of figuring out what that means. Perhaps, like Hagar, we are in the wilderness right now, at the crossroads of exhaustion and doubt. And I am certain God sees us today. We are struggling as a people. We are hurting for justice, for righteousness, for peace. But I think we might all have our roles mixed up, and we may all be fighting for the wrong seats at the wrong tables. Maybe your place isn't in leading the charge against racism or violence. Perhaps it's sitting back and listening to what people of color have to say about their lived experiences. Maybe your role is concern for your neighbor in response to all the political, economic, and health-related strife that pervades our communities. Maybe our role is raising children that love a little better than we do, running a nonprofit that cares for the oppressed, or maybe preaching a sermon that ruffles a few feathers and steps on a few toes. So in the conflict, what is our role right now? Maybe it's to take a deeper look within and re-examine the ways God might be calling us into God's purposes for the world through connecting with the world around us rather than detaching from our neighbor's pain and looking heavenward. Perhaps we are the carriers of this divine responsibility. So find your chair and pull up to the table. Amen.